This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 178, where today CJ and I are going to talk to Doug Ware about his Azure Functions for SharePoint, recorded live January the 24th, 2017.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by Valid.nl. Valid's motto is stay ahead. Its mission is to enable its customers to excel in their business through the innovative use of IT. Valid is always on the lookout for new colleagues. Are you interested in all things happening in Azure, whether in infrastructure, SQL Server, Office 365, BI, SharePoint, or .NET? Look them up on valid.nl.
Good day, CJ.
How you doing, man?
Doing really good. And yourself?
Very well, thank you. Very well.
Awesome. Awesome. What's up with you? What's new with you?
We've got a nice sort of big juicy initiative at Hyperfish that we're working on, a whole bunch of new features and kind of things that we're kicking off. So we really got stuck into that this week, and we've been doing a bunch of planning and technical design and requirements gathering and all that sort of stuff and kicking things off. So yeah, we're pretty exciting. We should be done with it in a few weeks' time or a couple of sprints' time, and we'll be able to talk more about it then. But it's nice to sink your teeth into something big and meaty.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I've recently been able to start really recording some of the demos for the SharePoint Framework class I'm working on, and I've held off on some of it because I got a bit of a heads up that the APIs are going to have a significant refactoring. And sure enough, they did with the release candidate zero that came out. So I'm really glad I didn't start recording, at least the demo part. So the way I do stuff is I usually write scripts instead of just talking straight into the mic. I usually read off of a script that I type up. Yeah. And so I have the scripts all written, and I've got the demos that I want to do, but I've wanted to just kind of start scratch and recording for the first time. And I'm using a new tool. I use Adobe Creative Cloud to do a bunch of my recording, and learned about a new tool that they've recently, I don't know if it's new to Creative Cloud, it's new to me, but it's called Prelude. Mm. And effectively lets me do a screencast of recording and record, say 25 minutes. But even if I have to kind of muck around with some stuff or something screws up and I want to go back and fix it, before when you actually stitch the lessons together, it really was cumbersome to put it all together. And what Prelude lets me do is easily import it, do really quick scrubbing, create sub clips out of one video clip. And when I go to use that in Premiere, each of those little sub clips, that's all I end up seeing with a bunch of meta tags around it and stuff. So it's it's a lot easier to manage if you spend a little bit of time up front on it. So,
oh, nice. I hadn't heard of that. I'll have to check it out.
It's pretty cool. There's a cool I was watching a cool video class on it just recently about it, but it's pretty slick. Pretty slick.
Nice. Nice.
Any rate.
Hey, so you got to sit down with somebody today.
I did. We got to sit down with Doug Ware, and I interviewed him. We talked about a new project that he's put out. It's an open source project called the Azure Functions for SharePoint. We'll get to that interview in just a few minutes here. We want to do a little bit of news here.
Yeah, perfect.
Before we dive into that. But I guess one bit of news here that I saw, it's kind of a bit of a slow week recently. But
it's kind of been a slow year, to be honest.
So far, it really has, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've got one, and this is a really interesting one. It's about Microsoft is mulling cutting the UK data center investment amid the Brexit concerns. And Microsoft has got a UK-hosted online event where they're going to discuss the impact of their likely departure from the UK's likely departure from the European Union and its impact on the tech industry. And so they're looking at trying to avoid import tariffs on any hardware and such. And so they're looking at, if they build out their data centers, they're going to get a pretty significant hit in the UK data centers with the leave, with the whole Brexit and them and UK leaving the UK. And so this is leaving the European Union. And so this is...
the UK is leaving the UK. Yeah, that'd be pretty brutal.
Yeah, Brexit is just step one. Step two is leaving the UK.
Right. Oh my goodness, don't joke.
Come to the...
I wouldn't rule anything out these days.
Come to the podcast for cloud news and geopolitical updates.
That's right. Oh dear.
Yeah. So it's a
That's a big
interesting.
Move.
Yeah, it is a big move. I don't understand all the details around it, but I found it to be, we saw cloud and Microsoft and Brexit kind of pop up, and they were culling the investment. So it's a bit of a surprise to me.
Yeah, that is quite interesting. I'm guessing that it's not quite as an attractive location that it was, especially for customers in Europe, right? Because now they're not going to be under EU laws and restrictions and regulations. And so for customers elsewhere in the EU, or what is going to remain of the EU, probably won't be as attractive location because, you know, they're not going to have those same protections. So they might as well go to the Germany data centers or wherever else Microsoft invests. So it doesn't surprise me. That's but that is definitely interesting.
Yeah, it is. It was just a good bit of news to sit there and share with everyone.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
You got any news items for us?
Yeah, I got a brand spanking new one. The day we recorded this, this came out. It's from the OneDrive and the Office team. It says, OneDrive brings new collaboration and management features to the enterprise. So the big one in all this is for OneDrive users, until now, the client applications didn't do a good job of syncing SharePoint content to your local machine. So they'd sync your OneDrive and, you know, and things like that, but not SharePoint sites and document libraries that you'd sync. And so now that the updated clients are rolling out today, I believe, the OneDrive for Business. And so now in SharePoint sites, you can click the sync button in the toolbar on a document library and sync it to your local PC. And this will work across Windows and Mac now, which is nice. The interesting bit that I don't know yet, because I haven't really tried this out just yet, is do I have to do this on every machine that I sync OneDrive to, like my phone, my two laptops and a desktop that I've got, for example? Do I have to go to each of these SharePoint sites and sync it to each of those machines? Because if that's the case, that's a bit of a royal pain in the butt, if you ask me. What would be nice is if it remembered it, that you click sync, and then, you know, when you connected to a new machine, it would ask you, do you want to sync this SharePoint site? Because, you know, some you might not want to, right? Some, like your phone, for example, you might not want to sync all of your SharePoint sites, document libraries, too, and you might want to be selective about that. So I'm not sure if it kind of remembers or if you have to go to each SharePoint site on each device and connect it, which I think sucks. I guess I have to play with that. So that's one of the major features. The second major feature is that there's a standalone Mac client. So it used to be that you used to have to go get the OneDrive client application from the App Store in Mac OS. But that's kind of a pain for a bunch of reasons, especially for enterprise rollouts and stuff. And so they've got this standalone Mac client now that lets enterprises go distribute it to a bunch of machines and all that sort of stuff more easily, which is nice. Also, they kind of take a bit more control over the update process, I imagine, stuff like that. It's also got an activity center. So this is kind of like Dropbox. where you can click the icon and it'll sort of tell you a bit more about what it's doing. So that's always a nice thing to have. So that's cool. Yeah, it's called Activity Center. It'll show you all the files it's been updating and syncing, a bit more visibility into what's going on, which I think is always a good thing. And then there's some better sharing, simplified sharing options. No idea how well that works. Streamlined guest access. I think any progress in that regard would be better. So I'm not sure what this is, but it's probably better.
Yeah, I hope so.
But yeah, simplified sharing options, streamlined guest access. I think it's just some new UX and UI around making sure you get it done. And then there's some IT admin support capabilities for sync and share. And there's this new OneDrive admin center. So it gives you information on, you can, you know, block certain types of file syncing, sharing controls, storage management, device access compliance and notifications and bits and pieces. So there's a new OneDrive sort of admin portal for admins to use that they can sort of centralize some of these IT controls. But anyway, we'll link to the blog post. And OneDrive's definitely making strides and getting better and better. So I'll have to take a look at these new things and see how it stacks up.
Yeah, well, I mean, at least they're no pun intended, but at least they're working on it and making updates.
Well done. That's quite good.
Yeah, I tried. Yeah, so I have one more. This one is, it's a bit of a, now the title, I'm just going to preface it. I think it's a bit of a sensationalist title, so don't dive too much. There's a bit of clickbait here, but it's by the Petri.com website. It says Office 365 meets its SLA but fails elsewhere. And what they do is, it's a classic article that reads up and summarizes another blog post and then links to the blog post. So the article refers to a blog post by Tony Redmond, who I'm sure a lot of infamous. Our listeners are familiar with.
Yes.
Infamous, yeah. What Microsoft does with Office 365 is they talk about, they are always shooting for, you know, I think it was 3 or 4 nines right now for Office 365. In a recent blog post, Microsoft talked about how the Office 365 service achieved an average of a 99.98% uptime in the first three quarters of 2016, which comes out to about 75 minutes of downtime. It's not bad when you think about it over the course of 9 months. Yeah. The blog post, what they're highlighting here is that Tony Redmond pointed out that there's a lot of factors that govern how an SLA is calculated. So the challenge that we have here is that while Office 365 as a whole or as the specific workloads may be achieving that very high level of uptime, your tenant may have a different experience. Because remember, Office 365 is, I don't want to say this like it's coming across negative, it's just an aspect of how it's built and the products that are built on it, but it's, you don't have like one SharePoint deployment that's over a ton and ton of different servers. You actually have thousands and thousands of SharePoint deployments. And so your SharePoint Online deployment is a tenant, and that's running on specific environments. So CJ, you guys, your tenants may be running in, say, the Seattle data center. My tenant is running maybe somewhere closer to where I am on the East Coast of the US, or in more extreme examples between Europe and in North America. And your tenant may be achieving a average or achieved uptime percentage of say 99.1%, but when the entire service is getting a 99.98 service. And so this blog post kind of explains the different, or this article explains how your service may not be getting the same exact uptime that Office 365 does. I don't think that this is one of those like, you know, caught a tiger by its tail kind of articles where they're trying to bag on someone. I think it's more that they are simply trying to highlight, you know, understanding how all this works, how the different APIs work and stuff like that. There's a few other pits do where it starts diving in about some of the challenges around the different APIs, around the management API to get some of their data in-house. Some of the data may not be, they're accusing them of being not so accurate. But at any rate, I found it to be kind of interesting to kind of see a bit of the behind the scenes of how Office 365 is being managed and how the different APIs are
Yeah, we did a really interesting episode interview with Steve Peschke from Office365Monitor.com or Office365Mon.com about, it was episode 166, and it was about uptime and monitoring of Office 365. And Steve builds a tool that he sells called Office 365 Mon that helps customers track and monitor their uptime in sort of real world usage scenario type things, like can you actually get to your mailbox, right? Because Microsoft's definition of being up is different than what most people would think. And you can go find out exactly what measures they measure it by. But for example, they'll measure things like, is mail not being dropped? And that means that Exchange Online would be up. Users might not be able to get to their mailbox or send email or even receive the email, but at least mail is not being dropped. And so it's a little, that was a while ago, and I don't know if that's accurate anymore, but that's my understanding of Exchange Online uptime, one of the Exchange Online uptime measures. And so it can be quite different, the perception between up to a user and the perception or the meeting their SLAs, right, can be quite different. And so I think what they're also getting at here in the article is like, even though Microsoft says your tenant is up, you might have some alternative facts about that.
I see what you did there.
Yeah. So while Microsoft might be saying your tenant is up and it meets four nines or whatever, there can be parts of the service that are not available that either don't have SLAs attached to them or are not technically part of an SLA or something like that, that sort of gives them a little bit of wiggle room there. So it's an interesting article. He's certainly not wrong.
Yeah, interesting. That's all the bit that I have for the news this week. Do you have anything else you wanted to share with our listeners?
No, that was it for me.
Okay, so before we dive in the interview, I got an important question for you. I'm going to spring on you. Who do you like for the Super Bowl? Because by the time this comes out, the Super Bowl will be happening a couple days after this episode rolls out. So
Falcons.
We got the NFL
Falcons
Super Bowl.
All the way.
You like the Falcons?
Yep. Absolutely.
Because they destroy the Seahawks?
Yep. If they're going to destroy... Well, we lost... Yeah, so the Seahawks lost them pretty miserably. And they were just a fantastic... They just did such a great job. Like, they deserve to win the game. And they seem like a really good team on a charge, and I'd love to see them go all the way.
Yeah. All right, so do you have a prediction for us? You want to give us a score?
Oh, man.
Come on, I'm going to put you on the spot.
Dude, I don't know that much about football. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I'd say the Falcons will be somewhere in the late 30s and probably by about 12 points.
So like what, 38, 26?
Yeah, something Falcons? Like that. That seems reasonable.
That's not bad. You know, that's a pretty good call. You pay attention to what sporting lines, books, Vegas, any of that
kind
of stuff?
No, I know that you do. And you may have given me a little bit of insight into what Vegas is expecting.
You're going to say you did a pretty good job there. Yeah, so Vegas has got it. I'm going to take, hypothetically, if I was a betting man. I'm not a betting man, but hypothetically, if I was, I would be betting. The over-under is 60 points, which is a record for the NFL, for a Super Bowl. So the over-under is the total number of points scored in the game. I'm going to take the over on that one and say that there are going to be more than 60 points scored, which, frankly, is a bit of a risky,
especially for
it's very
a Super
risky
Bowl, right?
It's gambling.
Like
but,
are they traditionally, I know we're getting off topic here, but are they traditionally quite high scoring or fairly low scoring? Because I would have guessed low scoring.
They're generally a little bit more high scoring, generally a little bit more, but I don't know. I mean, we'll see on that one. And then Vegas says it's going to be a 3-point spread. Mm. So by according to Vegas, it's supposed to be, the score is supposed to be 32-29 New England's favorite by 3 points. So I'm going to take, I'm actually going to take the over, but then I'm going to hedge and I'm going to take the Falcons just 7 gotcha. Points. So I'll say 35-28.
Interesting.
I just about the same thing you said.
I will actually be coming back from Whistler from a weekend away. So I will probably be tuning into it on the radio for the first quarter just as I come back into town before I get on. Oh, on the TV.
That's right. Your Super Bowl for you starts at like 3 in the afternoon.
Yep. So it's it's a little early. I vividly remember I went away on the same boys' ski weekend when the Seahawks made the Super Bowl the second time recently. And as soon as we got over the Canadian border, one of the guys in the back seat cracked open his laptop and we got on LTE and started streaming the game. Because we didn't make it back into town in time. And so we watched like the first quarter and a bit on the laptop. It was pretty funny.
That's awesome.
Not the driver, of course, but just the back seat and cranked up the sound. So it was good.
Never watch TV while you're driving.
Yeah, try not to anyway.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Well, how about we roll this interview with Doug and listen to a little bit of Azure Functions with SharePoint.
The Microsoft Cloud Show is sponsored by ShareGate. ShareGate makes it easier for organizations to adopt and use the latest Microsoft productivity tools, helping millions of users be happier and more productive at work. ShareGate is trusted by over 10,000 IT admins from over 110 countries to manage, migrate, and secure their SharePoint and Office 365 environments. ShareGate is recognized as the must-have tool for day-to-day administration of on-premises, cloud, and hybrid environments. Interested in learning more? Check them out on ShareGate.com to learn how ShareGate can make you more productive.
All right, this is Andrew today. I am sitting here and going to interview someone by the name of Doug Ware. So Doug is the founder of InstaQuick and a SharePoint MVP based in Atlanta, Georgia. Doug is best known as the author of many SharePoint books and videos focused on SharePoint development. He helps a crew of like-minded and also terribly handsome and clever geeks organize community events, including the Atlanta Code Camp and Cloud Saturday Atlanta. Doug, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Hey, thanks for reading the whole intro there. We are terribly handsome and clever.
Oh, that was all coming from the heart. That was me. You didn't send me anything.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, wink, wink.
Oh man, so you guys just finished up a big community event up in Atlanta this past weekend. Is that right?
Yeah, we did. It was Cloud Saturday Atlanta, and it was great. We had a fantastic time. I didn't hear anybody making any complaints, and I think we served up most of the lunches, which is always good.
Oh, that's good. I mean, it's got to be a little tough. I mean, did you have any trouble like grabbing the attention with the Falcons game going on in the background, or was that did they overlap at all?
No, that was on Sunday.
That was on Sunday,
so it was all good. Otherwise, I might have had to cancel my presentation.
So, should I ask you who your pick is for the Super Bowl?
Well, I'm a fair weather fan, so the Falcons, of course. I was your typical taxpayer ranting and raving about the new stadium they're building here in Atlanta. But now I'm like, yeah, that's totally cool. New stadium.
They deserve it.
Yeah.
all the revenue is going to be coming in from people visiting and going to the parade and everything. It's going to pay for the whole thing, right?
Well, they're doing this commercial where you can like buy a seat license.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and before I was like, I'm not doing that, but now I've actually researched it.
Hey, man, it's amazing what success actually will breed, huh?
I know, right? Well, you know, I know you're a Gator and I'm a dog. So it's it's good that there's a chance we might win a championship here in the state of Georgia.
Hey, I was trying to keep things civil, but I mean, if you want to go there to college football, I know a lot of our listeners are not from the U.S., so they don't know what college football is. Or, and we're talking about football, not the circle thing that rolls around. We're talking about the one that's nice and oblong, the right one. But yeah, I know it's great to see Atlanta having success. We don't know what that is down here in Jacksonville. We haven't had that in about a decade, so.
Oh, well, it's bound to come around.
It is. So, hey, Doug, I saw that you released something just recently that I wanted to bring you on the show and share with our listeners. And so before I do that, I know I read your bio here, but why don't you tell me a little bit about, you know, who you are and what kind of stuff you've been working on the last, I don't know, last couple of years, last couple of months or so.
Yeah. So I have a couple companies here in Atlanta that are both, you know, small companies that I run. One's an ISV called Instant Quick that has some apps that I sell through the office marketplace. Mm-hmm. And then I've got my older company, which is called Illuminocean, which is a consulting company. And that's really how I make my living, is doing consulting work. The dream of kicking back and watching the license revenue run in from the office marketplace hasn't quite panned out. I'm not soon to retire from that. But, you know, my main motivation for doing all that is I'm a software developer, and I'm real self-indulgent. So I like to work on cool stuff. And so here the last couple of months, I've been taking advantage of some new releases from the Azure team to move some of my old stuff that I built back in 2011, 2012 era when Azure was new and young. And so the stuff I got is so old, they have put a classic label in front of the service. Yeah, I was like, oh.
It's so old, they call it classic.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So I'm moving some of my classic cloud services stuff to this new amazing thing called Azure Functions. And I went ahead and open sourced it because I think everybody should be using them. They're amazing.
That's all. Okay, so you're using Azure Functions. I'm going to get into what you're using it for in just a minute here. But how do you like the experience here and developing with Azure Functions?
I like it. I mean, it's a brand new kind of thing. So there are the typical rough edges, but overall, super, super satisfied. And I have to say, shout out to the Azure Functions team. They've been super helpful. Anytime I've even mentioned them on social media, they've reached out to me, and I've talked to engineers there about best practices, and yeah, they're great.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, we talked to, I think it was Chris Anderson and Jeremy Thake about it back in episode 126, and again, I caught up with Jeremy at the Ignite conference in episode 153, where we talked a little bit more about what Microsoft was doing with Azure Functions and such, and some of the new updates that they had released. I'm curious, you know, when you're doing the development, is the development in the same style where you don't really have this model of where you build and test everything local? Do you still kind of build and like deploy stuff up in the cloud, and you're doing the development stuff up in the cloud and having it run there? Or do you have much more kind of like an ALM process that you can run through with like continuous integration and development and such?
That's probably the weakest link in Azure Functions at the moment, is that they don't have deployment slots, which are a great Azure function. I'm sorry, a great Azure feature. A great Azure feature that you can get it with regular web services, right? So without having deployment slots, you have to kind of make some things up as you go along, and we're just being patient for those to appear. But I kind of got out in front of it, and I was using Visual Studio to do this before there was even the hint of a Visual Studio project template, which we still don't use. So we have PowerShell scripts that we run at build time, and we're rolling it in, but this open source project we have, one of the things that's really high on our list to do is get all of the setup totally automated, not just the app itself.
Gotcha.
But the whole environment.
Okay, and what do you, you said that you were using this in the sense that you'd taken some of the stuff you had done in the past, and you were rolling it in from the historical work that you did, you were rolling it into as Azure Functions, and you've put this together as an open source project that you published up on GitHub. Now, is this one that, are you hosting the functions, or are you hosting, you're simply just the steward for the project, and then everyone can go take it and roll out their own deployments of them to use in their own applications?
Yeah, I'm just the steward of the project. I'm not about to pay for somebody else's environment just because I have an open source project. You know how cheap I am, dude.
Making sure we're clear, so someone's not looking for the way, where do I log in and sign up and use Doug's account?
Yeah. No, the project is free as in beer.
Free beer tomorrow, though, right?
Free beer as long as you're paying for it.
There you go. So let me ask, what kind of things are you doing in Azure Functions, and why would someone consider using this? I mean, what kind of a developer is it for? Is it for anybody doing certain kinds of projects? Is it for a specific like audience? Is it, you know, what are you achieving? Stuff like that.
So that's a good question. That was a key thing in my presentation that I did last weekend at Cloud Saturday, was trying to get my head around the best way to explain this. And I still don't think I have it quite right, but I guess you could think of an Azure function as distinct from an application the same way that like the DOS dir command is different from Word, right? Okay. So a function is just this piece of functionality that takes some input, runs, and ends.
Okay.
And just like in Windows or Unix, right, you could build an entire application by chaining these things together to do work. But in our case, we've got this backend for all of our apps that's a multi-tenant, multi-app backend, and it does certain things. It manages security tokens. It does provisioning of artifacts. It does long-running processes in the background. When I first built that on Azure PaaS way back in the day, I had this dream that I was going to offer one-off customizations to people, and I built this pretty cool facility where I could register the customizations with a config file, and it would load the assembly and do this and that and the other thing. But I was always afraid. I just had this fear of deployment, right? These things that I just said are in our functions have to always work, right? Mm-hmm. They have to always be there, but they don't really change. Mm-hmm. So having them inside the applications was bad, right? We had this unnecessary environmental dependency on these four or five things that we always need to do. Mm-hmm. And so when I saw functions, I was like, this is great. I can finally take these things out. And I might have been able to do that previously with web jobs, which was a forerunner to Azure Functions. Mm-hmm. I just go off on a little segue. I don't know if you realize this, but Azure Functions are a cross between the web jobs feature and this other project that they did, which finds slack capacity in an Azure data center.
Mm.
And so they're able to offer this consumption model where you only pay for the function execution. And the reason they can do that is because it's finding slack capacity on other people's cores that they're already paying for that isn't being used.
Right. So it doesn't impact anybody else. It's just using excess capacity that's just unused.
Exactly. So everything they make off of it, I assume, is a little bit of gravy.
There you go.
On top, I looked at my bill for these set of core functions the other day, and I compared them to the production systems we still have up and well for a long time for the classic version, which this is an apples to oranges comparison, right? Because there's other features in the classic version that aren't in functions. But that environment costs, just for the CPU time, $180 a month, roughly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the functions environment cost 3 cents.
You know, I read something similar to this where, Troy Hunt was using Azure Functions to do some special like API stuff and monitoring hits coming into his haveibeenpawned.com site.
Mm.
And to see if there were any abuses, and if there were, he was using an Azure function to take IPs and register it with CloudFront, which was doing like kind of a caching front service to his API to add it as a blocked IP. And I think he said he was spending something like, for 100,000 operations, he was spending something like 1 or 2 pennies a month on this service.
Yeah, I believe that. That's right in line with my experience. I mean, we've had this system in production now with a customer since a week before we were supposed to do it, right? Since before GA.
Yeah.
And it's getting thousands of messages a day, and it just doesn't cost much to run. And we get, the coolest thing about it is we get that same 99.95% SLA that we got with the classic functions.
Mm-hmm.
The classic web roles and worker roles. Mm. So, you know, it's a win-win. The big difference is it's not always alive. So you wouldn't necessarily want to do something on it that needs to respond instantly. If your service has gone to sleep, it's going to have to wake up, and there's some lag time involved in that. But for doing background processing and like app startup signals when there's a bunch of other stuff going on, you know, there's lots of ways with a web application that you can hide that kind of thing from the users. They don't have to necessarily see that it's happening. So it's working real well.
So, okay. So what I'm hearing you say is confirming some stuff that I've heard from people who have been using it, which is, you don't make this as part of your like synchronous model. You're really going to make this as part of like your asynchronous model, where you have like this loose architecture, and you're not calling a function all the time and waiting for the response right then. Instead, it's more like you're putting stuff on a queue or something that's going to fire off the function or tell the function to go start doing something to create something for you, you can pick up later, or that it's an asynchronous process. You don't need to have it run. So if I have a bunch of, like, say, shutting down VMs or something like that, say, I need all this work to go be done. I'm going to put it on a queue and let them go scale up and get it done when it needs to get done. Is that a fair picture to paint there?
I don't think so. Okay. It's sort of fair in that, you know, so I guess we should back up, right? The way an Azure function runs is it gets a trigger. And that trigger can be inbound web request or a timer, a cron signal going off, or a service bus queue message, or and a various and sundry other things that can trigger it. And when the service is awake, or if you're paying for an always-on configuration, which is an option, you can absolutely get really fast response times. So the biggest issue is, A, how are you paying for it, and what plan is it under, and being aware of the limitations that you've chosen or that you've inherited by making that choice on how you were going to pay for it. But once it's alive and running, it's really, really fast. We have this set of features that are a function app on our end that we host, and what that the function receives remote events from SharePoint, and it takes that remote event and it parses it out to not be WCF gobbledygook, turns it into a nice, easy-to-consume JSON, and drops it into a service bus queue. Our customer has their own tenancy, and they're paying for the service bus and for the function on the other end, which is listening on that service bus for messages, for events to process. And we actually had to put a 15-second delay on the delivery time for the messages, because for synchronous SharePoint events, it was calling our function and our function was responding. So I guess what I should say, the synchronous event would be an item is updating, not updated, right? So there's a little block on the SharePoint side. It's waiting for the thing it notified to reply that, yeah, I got the message. But the service bus trigger that was traversing the service bus so fast and getting to the other side so quickly that the commit wasn't done on SharePoint sometimes by the time this function on the other side was trying to read the item to determine what changed.
So you're moving too fast.
Moving too fast, right, yeah.
So first problem, first time we really had that kind of a problem, like creating my own race condition when usually it's I'm the one that's waiting for stuff to happen.
Yeah, yeah, I'm not used to being being quick.
I thought you said it's too quick.
Well, yeah, I know, but we got a dream, right? Well, they say fake it till you make it, but in reality, I'm more like the tortoise, not the hare.
I got you. I got you. So I'm looking at your site here. I saw you go to GitHub, and you can see on the GitHub project, which is github.com/instaquick, says /Azure Functions for SharePoint. And on there, I see that you've got the docs dynamically generated, and there's another URL that you can go to go see the actual docs. And I see that you've got four functions listed here. So it looks like they're functions that are specifically targeted for SharePoint. So app launch, event dispatch, get ACS access tokens, and create credential tokens. So could you explain what these different functions are for users so that they can see, you know, would this maybe help the project that they're working on?
Yeah, sure. And I should add, the name Azure Functions for SharePoint, we intend to add additional functions to it over time. In fact, if you look at the video, it's already out of date because at the time I did the video for setup, there were only three. But the original trio were App Launch as the first one. And App Launch, what it does is it is what you set your start URL to your SharePoint add-in to point to App Launch. Okay. And so the user launches the app. It goes over to the Azure function. The Azure function gets the request and picks apart the SharePoint context token and looks in a configuration store to figure out which is in blob storage, to figure out what add-in is this. And then based on the config, it may provision some stuff, like a landing page, if it hasn't been provisioned previously.
Okay.
If it needs to. And if it doesn't need to, it just drops a message into a service bus queue that says a user launched the application and it redirects back to SharePoint.
Okay.
And once it's done that, the system has captured all of the access tokens for the user and for the app. And so the next function that you might use would be the get ACS access tokens function. And what that's designed to do is, you know, like I said, we have this customer where we have our functions and they have their functions, and their functions could be something other than functions. They could be a Unix VM for all, you know, we don't really care. But the idea is that those clients don't get the client secrets or the client IDs. They just outsource that token management to the Azure Functions app, right? And so there's a little piece of shared evidence that they would get back on that app launch redirect. The query string's got some stuff on it. And so then they could pass that to their middle tier, which calls the get access tokens function with the little piece of secret, and it'd go, here's the access tokens for this user and for the app, and then they could create a SharePoint client context.
That's really useful because it is, I mean, that's a pain in the butt to write that plumbing code every time to go get access tokens from ACS or from Azure AD. I mean, you got a lot of stuff you got to keep track of, and it seems like code you're always writing. That really does simplify it.
Yeah, and if you think about it, it's not application-specific code. So the fact that you're repeating that over and over and over again in all your applications is a code smell, right? Mm-hmm. You want to centralize that functionality, ideally. At least we did. Mm. Yeah, and so then the third one I already talked about is the event dispatch. And if you're on the other end of that event dispatch message on the service bus, you get the information about the SharePoint event that took place, again, with context tokens so that you can then reach back into the SharePoint site and do further work on it without having to have the app infrastructure.
And without having to do the whole like WCF SOAP message that comes from SharePoint. You get a nice clean, what you would expect like with like a current day service request, which is going to come across as standard HTTP and JSON.
Yeah, exactly. And there will be a new function soon, which will be a webhook trigger. Mm. And that webhook trigger will parse the web. It'll talk back to SharePoint, get the same information, put it into the exact same structure, and send it on the message queue. So you won't have to write code that's actually responding to these events to know what kind of event it is.
I gotcha. That's nice.
And then the fourth one.
Saying the fourth one, the create credential token?
Yeah, so that's new. And that's one that I've got for a set of Office add-ins that we're working on. And the way those are going to work, because we want them to work on-prem too, is they're not Azure AD, and they're not using the graph to connect to SharePoint. And so at the beginning, the thing that you do in the Office add-in is you pick the SharePoint site that you want and give it your real credentials. So what happens when you do that is it sends that information to the function, which validates it by trying to connect to SharePoint. And if it's valid, it encrypts all that information into one big long token and sends it back. Now, on the other end, it gets that payload, it needs to be able to decrypt it. So in this case, in the deployment, the function config multi-tenant has the encryption, password, and salt in it. And then on the other end, the other node, web services, also gets that same information, which is shared. And that gets sent back. I'm sorry, it uses that once it gets the token to pick it apart and figure out who the user and the password and the site is. Nice and secure. It's using the system crypto libraries, which are pretty strong.
Oh, that's nice. That does make it a lot easier. Yes, and that's going to be useful when you're not using something like ACS or Azure AD.
That's exactly right. And then we haven't put it in yet because we haven't needed it. But like I said, in addition to the webhook feature, there will be one that does token management for the Azure AD tokens as well. And I would guess that there's probably, since there's a bunch of Office add-ins in flight right now, that there probably will be Azure Functions for Office repo at some point in the future that'll be this same concept.
Oh, this is very cool. What kind of response have you gotten since you put it out?
So I've been blown away. There's a lot of interest in it. I put the announcement that we had the open source project out on the Saturday before the MLK holiday, 3-day weekend.
Okay.
Because I had to get it out there. And I don't know if you've seen if you actually looked at the docs that we're generating with DocFX, but a lot of work went into those, and there's more and more articles that I would like to write and that contributors are working on as well. But, you know, I was like, I gotta release this thing. We need contributors. We're using it in real life. It should be out there. And so I thought, oh, it's a Saturday over a 3-day weekend. No big deal, right? I'll put it out. I'll have plenty of time. And the spike in my blog, the tweets got retweeted like 60 times. It's just been nuts. Now, I haven't picked up any new contributors yet, which is really what we want. So if you're listening to this and you're interested in the project, we would love to have your help. We would love to have your help. But at the moment, it's me and my fellow MVP, Dan Addis, and a gentleman named Pete Skelly here in town who helps organize a lot of stuff and hopefully will be an MVP at some point because he certainly deserves it for all the stuff that he does.
Oh, agreed. This is what I've been looking at your docs as we've been going through this to get a feel for it. I love the docs. I mean, they're really easy to digest and to see what's to understand understand how to set it up and how each one of them works. You got the code snippets in there, kind of showing you the templates, what it's expecting and stuff. It's very easy to digest.
Did you see that if you click the view source that it jumps over to GitHub?
Are you kidding me?
No, it's awesome. This is all generated using a project called DocFX, which is also on GitHub. And it was a bit of a learning curve to get my head around it, but it is amazing, and I'm going to be using it on everything I do from now on.
That is really cool. Oh, there you go. Hold on. I just got into... Oh, this is slick. I'm sorry. Now, I totally missed that. I totally missed the API docs. I was just reading the articles. And then, look at that. It goes straight back to the actual function. This is very impressive. Yeah, so I know that the listeners, you can't see this. We'll have links to this stuff in the show notes, but it's really cool because when you're looking at the docs, I'm guessing all this stuff is dynamically generated for you. You've just written some of the content. It knows how to link things back and forth. And if you click on the actual class, it takes you back to the class inside the project in GitHub.
Yeah, this is their successor to Sandcastle, right? So the API docs are all done with XML comments and the C# code, mm-hmm. and it generates that. The articles are written by hand using Markdown, and then there's a build process, which is in the Visual Studio solution. One thing that I'm going to be writing about soon in my blog is Task Runner Explorer and the command add-on. I did a poll on Twitter that confirmed kind of what I suspected, which is that most people have never even heard of this thing. Mm-hmm. But it's just an extension that you add that will let you add PowerShell scripts or batch files, which you shouldn't use, right, to a thing that is in Visual Studio called Task Runner Explorer. So when I'm ready to build the docs, I just open up Task Runner Explorer and right-click the build doc task and click run.
It's so much easier when you're running an open source project like that to be able to easily gen that stuff. I'm in the middle of trying to finish up. I run an open source project for the Office UI Fabric for an Angular port of it. And same deal. I mean, we right now our doc site is all a manual kind of build every time I rebuild the site, rebuild the library, but I'm in the process of going through and setting it up to where whenever we do a push to the the master branch in the repo, it already right now is publishing the npm NuGet to CDNJS, but I want it to also update another repo that's our entire website to have that get pushed out as well. So really, I mean, it's an automated thing, right? You want, when you create a new feature, the documentation and the example of using that feature should be part of the commit.
Yeah, exactly. Right? Yeah, exactly. Now, if I could just get away from accidentally checking in access tokens to GitHub.
Yeah,
that's a big problem with these scripts, but I'll figure that out at some point. But the other thing about the DocFX project, if you'll notice, that's just Azure Blob storage, so that's totally static. There's no server side, and it doesn't cost anything to put it out there. We just copy the files into the Blob store and make it public, and boom, you got yourself a website.
That's very cool. Man, this is a really cool project. You've done a really good job with this.
Thanks, man. It's a... something I'm passionate about. I started working on it, and I have to say, not just Azure Functions, but AWS Lambda and where everything is going with serverless and microservices, it's completely changed how I think about software development.
Yeah.
This last 6 months have totally re-energized me, and I'm just like a coding fiend at the moment. And I just want to share it and get the word out.
Yeah, it's not, this whole serverless experience here where you totally think in a different way. It's like when I got into the whole working with containers, you start to develop in a very different, think in a very different way. And personally, I love it because I feel like I'm working with much smaller components that don't feel as, where when I worked with big projects, I felt like things were much more brittle. I love working with small components that are more loosely connected and easily, each one can be easily updated without feeling like I'm impacting so much other stuff, as long as their external signature is still going to be clean. And the deployment, the hosting of these independently scaling and stuff like Azure Functions makes life, it seems to reduce my stress from the development side, but it also makes it more enjoyable.
Yeah, it's really cool to think that your core infrastructure can just sit there and be stable and you can add features elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's an interesting, yeah. We're old enough to know that hasn't been like that for forever.
There should be a word for deployment phobia.
I have it. I am terrified of rolling out new releases. I love development, but I hate updating my production stuff.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than like the 4 or 5 hours after you push the deploy button, because you're like, all right, something's there's something going wrong, even as we, as I don't know what it is. I haven't gotten the emails yet, but I know I made a mistake, probably.
Everyone, we do that when I work for a big company. We'd always schedule rollouts would happen around like 10 or 11 o'clock on Friday night. Because I said, we don't want to impact anybody. I'm like, no. We want to roll that out around like 5 o'clock on Friday because everyone's leaving right about then. And now the next 5 or 6 hours are just sitting on pens and needles waiting for the phone call to say that something's broken. And when the phone call doesn't come, then it's like, well, then my phone must be broken. Anyway, awesome. Well, hey, how can people find out more information about this? About, you know, going, where can they find the GitHub repo? Where can they find information about you? Where would you point them to?
Yeah, so my blog is instantquick.com, and it sounds just like it's spelled. My name is actually Doug Ware. It's not some clever handle. I'm not like Doug the .NET guy or anything like that. So if you search for Doug Ware, the guy you find that's a software developer is me. And then as far as GitHub goes, just look for Azure Functions for SharePoint, and you'll find it. And then once you find it, click star, click watch, and then send me an email and start contributing. We'd love to get you.
Yeah, fork it. Fork it and start making some... Send some PRs to Doug. Yeah, we'll make sure that all these links are going to be in the show notes as well. So everybody that's, if you're listening to the episode, check your inbox. If you're on our mailing list, you'll get all these links. And then we'll also have it up in the show notes. They'll be in your podcast app. But hey, Doug, I got one more thing for you. We did this thing every once in a while on our show where CJ and I, who's not with us today, so we don't have to listen to his picks. But we ask our listener to, you know, our guest to if you have like, two or three things that are like, you know, cool and top of mind to you that don't have to be tech related, don't even have to be, you know, websites or anything, but maybe it's a book or a show or something you're listening to. Do you have any picks for our listeners, the things that you'd want to share?
Oh yeah, I got three. I always try to cultivate an attitude of gratitude, helps me be happy. And so I collect like really sad things that didn't happen to me. Right. It gives me a reference point. So I saw this documentary on Netflix by Ken Burns about the Dust Bowl. It's on PBS. And it begins with saying people tell stories about it and you think they must be exaggerating, but the truth is they're not telling you how bad it really was. So, you know, if you want to feel good about your current life, watch the Dust Bowl documentary. There's also... I saw this thing on Wired, and I bought the book. It's a book called Storm in a Teacup, The Physics of Everyday Life, that describes all these normal phenomena in ways that you can understand. It's by a woman named Helen Ksersky. I don't probably butchered her name, but it's not very long, and it's really, really good. And then the last thing, I got a third one, is Vikings. The Vikings television series. Again, be glad you don't live in the Dark Ages and you don't have to have the Danes coming across the horizon burning everything. Holy cow, that's such a good show.
Those are cool. I have to go check those out. Those are definitely, I love the picks that are not tech related too. That's really interesting. I like that. Cool.
Awesome, man.
I had three as well. I'll share with our listeners real quick. So one of them was a game we picked up from, actually, this is kind of tech, but it's not really tech. We got it for Christmas. It's the Oregon Trail card game. And I just said this right as you were drinking coffee. I'm sorry. I saw the coffee cup go up and I was like, I should wait.
Oh no, I just died of dysentery.
That's actually on the cover of the box. So we're sitting there playing. My kids are walking around. I was like, how are you doing today? I called them when I was out of town. And my son's like, I don't feel so well. I died of cholera this morning. So it's a lot of fun. It's a cool card game. They've done a really good job with it. Another one that's cool is in this great world of Facebook being overcome by all this, a lot of strong, passionate feelings. A friend of mine, Eric Harlan, turned me on to a Chrome add-in called Facebook Purity, which does an absolutely fantastic job of removing things from your feed before you can see them. So you don't get all irritated with people either of the same or different political views that you have. Just put some keywords in, it strips out the news posts, which is great for if you want to live in ignorance, which that's kind of what I want to do right now.
Oh man, I could follow my aunt again if I had
that. It's great. You don't have to unfollow people. You unfollow some of the things they're saying. So
I need that. Like,
I've cut out like, well, I'm not going to use the phrases here, but I've cut out so much stuff. Just like, you know what? I don't want to hear anything about politics in the U.S. It's very heated right now. But at any rate, and then the last one, this is a total geek fest, is I found a video just recently from the Jet Propulsion Lab of the Titan Touchdown, which was a probe that the Jet Propulsion Lab sent. It sent on a satellite out to Saturn. It passed by Saturn's moon Titan. We can't see to the Titan surface because the cloud cover is so thick. So it sent a probe down And the probe, as it went down, it did constant video and pictures that was sent back up to the satellite that was beamed back to Earth. And there's a complete video showing the entire, from the probe going all the way down to the surface of Titan. And you can even see the parachute kind of like go past, the parachute shuttle pass by. It's pretty freaking cool.
I'm going to definitely check that out.
Yeah. So there's a few, there's a couple links there that, that people can go take a look at. Different picks, not so much all tech related, but at any rate, hey, Doug. Thanks a lot for coming on the show today. I'm glad that we could share this with our listeners, because this is definitely going to be, the Azure Functions for SharePoint are going to be something that's going to be very, very useful for people who are doing any kind of SharePoint development these days.
So, I hope so. And thanks so much for having me. I'm sorry CJ couldn't be here, but I guess it's his loss, right?
Yeah, he's suffering from dysentery this morning, so we'll come back another time. Awesome. Hey, thanks a lot, Doug.
Thank you, Andrew. Bye.
Did you like this episode? Send us a tweet about it and drop us a 5-star review on iTunes. Word of mouth recommendations are the most effective ways for us to grow the show. We'd really appreciate it. If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text. We'll record it as a WAV or an MP3 and provide a link so that we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Air by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes and the Google Play Store by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook, searching for Microsoft Cloud Show, or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. And finally, sign up to our mailing list by heading to our website and entering your email to interact with us, participate in upcoming interviews, and other cool stuff. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.